This is a Sandy Boy Productions podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to All Have Another Podcast with Lindsay Hine. I'm your host, Lindsay, and I'm so grateful you are joining us today. This is episode 376, and my guest is Melindy Elmore. Melindy is a returning guest on the show. She came on the podcast in January of 2020 after she ran the Canadian record for the marathon at Houston in 2:24:50. So that was episode 222 of this podcast. Go back and listen to that first if you want to get a little intro to Melindy's story and journey to get to marathoning success. But Melindy just ran the Boston Marathon. She placed 11th, and you're going to hear about her experience in this episode, but she's got things to say about the course and her experience and the outcomes. And also, Melindy ran her first Olympic marathon this past year. She ran in Tokyo for Team Canada and placed 9th. Top 10 was her goal. We talk about that as well. I kind of wanted to have Melindy on after the Tokyo Olympics. I'm not sure why I didn't. So it was fun in this episode to get to talk about both Tokyo and the Boston Marathon, which, by the way, was just her fourth marathon. She's run Houston twice, Tokyo, and Boston. You're going to hear about her road to get here a little bit in this episode. But again, go back to episode 222 because she's got a long history of track career and triathlon career. She's also the mother of two. And at 42, she is running her fastest marathon times and just really finding success. So it was great to catch up with Melindy. I always love talking to her. All right, friends, Mother's Day is coming up and the Donna Foundation puts on a really great Mother's Day 5K. And if you're near Jacksonville, go sign up, do it in person. But if you want to do it virtually like me, you can sign up at mdyw.breastcancermarathon.com. You can celebrate every mom from April 8th to May 8th. That's the time frame of the virtual 5K. The Donna Foundation hopes to inspire moms everywhere to take steps forward, understanding, improving, and protecting their breast health. This is a foundation I'm super passionate about. I am BRCA2 positive and elected to have a prophylactic double mastectomy in 2013. I've been partnered with the Donna Foundation for 5 years now and just really believe in the work they're doing. So if you would like to support this organization, go sign up for the race. It's the Black Knight Donna 5K. I'm going to do it here in Raleigh, Saturday, May 7th at 8 a.m. If you'd like to join me, please reach out. Email me, lindsay@sandyboyproductions.com, or send me a message on Instagram, lindsayhine626. I'd love to connect with you. Use the code Lindsay10, that's LINDSEY10, to get 10% off your registration. And let's go support this awesome foundation. The link to register will be in the show notes. And you can also join my team. It's called All Have Another. I'd love to have you on our team. All right, friends, enjoy my conversation with Melindy Elmore. All right. Melindy Elmore is back on the show today. Welcome to the show, Melindy.
Hi.
How are you feeling post-Boston?
Well, I was able to get down the stairs today, so that was good. And I raced my three-year-old about 20 meters in the schoolyard. So I let him beat me, but I could actually run. So that's a good sign.
Tell me about the course. Like, was it what you expected? Was there anything about the course that you were like, holy crap, I wasn't expecting that?
Pretty much the whole thing. people tell you all about the Newton rollers, and I had studied that part on the map, and I knew that Heartbreak Hill would be what it is. But I didn't expect the first 30K to be as rolling as it was. You know, you talk about net downhill, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I found it a pretty challenging course and a challenging day overall, and definitely lived up to its reputation. But sometimes, you know, you think, oh, well, it's not, I'm from BC, it's very hilly where I live, it won't be so bad. But then I realized that where I live, it's kind of either up or down, but it's not those those rollers that constantly break your rhythm.
Okay, so you placed 11th, and as the people watching the race from our TVs on our couches, or if we're on Boylston Street or wherever, like we only see the lead pack, so we don't know. Like, I didn't know where you were. I was betting on you to have a good race, but I was like, where is Melindy? You can track, you can't see faces, you can't see body, like any of that. So, can you kind of give us a breakdown of your race and when you kind of like started rolling people up and getting higher in your placing?
Well, in fact, I didn't actually change places
Did you
very much
not?
through the race. No. So I'll give you the Cool's Note version. So, we line up, which is really amazing. They call they call Molly and Des and Paris up to do introductions, and that's always really motivating. And then, actually, this is the first time I've ever started a marathon where I get to be actually on the start line. I'm usually a few rows back, so that was kind of cool. It's just, being right there at the start of the race because there was enough room. And then we take off, and suddenly Dakota is just kind of off to my right, and I'm right beside her, and we're way ahead of everybody, or at least it feels like. I have nobody else in my vision, and I'm thinking like, where is everybody? What's going on? And we're going down a fairly steep hill to start, and it was the field. It was like people didn't really want to get running quite yet, so it felt like we were running away from the field. It was only a few steps, but you think like, oh, I don't want to necessarily be leading the Boston Marathon. But then looking down at my watch, we were actually quite slow. We ran our first K in over 3:30. And it's a very significant downhill, and bear in mind the leaders, their pace is probably like their average pace was a 3:20 something kilometer by the time the race was over, so quite slow for them. So the first 5K we probably gave up about a minute overall on what we should have come through in, and we were all obviously tightly packed together. And it was kind of like, okay, when's this race going to get going? And then after the first aid station at 5K, people started to get a little bit antsy. Des took the lead for a little bit. I was following her because she, of course, knows the course so well that I thought she's the one who knows the tangents. Just stick to her. And then it started to feel all of a sudden like, okay, we've surged. And my next K was like a 3:18, and then the one after that was like, I don't know, a 3:14. And I was like, okay, no, that's going to be beyond my wheelhouse for this race. As 7, 8K and after the slow start, it's still too much of a pickup. So at that point, the pack really fractured, and it was just before 9K. So the top women broke away. Charlotte Perdue was in that group, and Molly was in that group, and then the Kenyan Ethiopian runners. And Nell Roha was a little bit off of that. I was a little off of her. Then there were people behind me, so we completely fragmented after that. And I pretty much didn't see anybody else for the entire race from 9K to the end.
Whoa, that is so long to run alone.
It was. And Dakota actually came up on my shoulder at one point just before the halfway. And she and I traded off leads a few times over the hills, but we weren't going at the same pace at the same time. So it was helpful because she'd pull ahead and I'd keep my eyes on her, and then I'd feel good and pull ahead of her. But I had no idea what was going on behind me, and the road was pretty empty. I mean, when we start as a pack without any age group men around, it's quite it despite the fact that there's people lining the course cheering for you, you're in the race by yourself on an empty road.
That is wild. And that's the thing. Like, I had no idea you were alone for that long. That is so I was kind of like going back and forth tracking you guys, and I could see that you and Nell were kind of close to each other, but it's so hard to tell because even if you're like 10 meters, 20 meters, like you probably feel like very alone out there.
Yes, exactly. And I couldn't, I had expected I'd be able to run with her. I had hoped I'd be able to run with her, but I just was feeling a bit flat, honestly. And I think the rollers zap you early. like people worry. But anyways, yeah, it's kind of it becomes a really it can become a really solo effort when you're not in a pack, and it's a long ways. At one point I thought, oh boy, this is, this is a lot. I have a long ways to run. And then I kind of did the math and I thought, oh yeah, I have like 30 kilometers still to go here.
So you placed 11th. Where was your mindset going into the race as far as what you wanted to do, time-wise, place-wise, professional athlete-wise?
Right, yeah. So, respecting that it was a very strong field of runners in the race, I didn't want to put too many not expectations, but I wanted to be open to the fact that I could have a very good race and not maybe achieve the result that I would hope to achieve, and that I had to be open to that. And I think that's kind of what happened. I hoped I'd be higher up the field. I hoped I'd be, have an amazing breakthrough race where I surprised myself, because the last few workouts I had were very strong, so I felt really confident that I was fit and strong and ready to have a good race. So a top 10, in the 6 to 10 position was kind of what I was hoping for, and I was hoping to run a few minutes faster. But then I got in the race, and it was a little bit harder for me to find my groove in this particular marathon than in the past. So I really had to resort to, being very in the moment, very process oriented, very much like you need to, get your fueling, get your water, keep working the hills, not think too far ahead, do your best, finish the race, all those things that you kind of get to when you're like, this isn't actually feeling quite like my day. So how are we going to do the best we can with what we've got today? And at the end of the day, maybe that didn't bring me the result I had quite hoped and dreamed of, but it was still a good solid day, so I'm proud of myself for what I was able to do.
Yeah, I love that you were able to work through that mentally and still like push through and like push to the best of your ability, even though you felt like this might be my day. Because I think it can be easy and more easy for people who aren't doing this as their job to, but to just kind of like throw in the towel and like let off the gas a little bit and say, it's not going to be today.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to still remember that there, regardless, like you, whatever the day is, you want to get the most out of yourself, right? And you want to finish the race feeling like, okay, I still didn't give up. I like you said, still didn't throw in the towel. Because honestly, there were a few moments where I thought about it, but I'm not going to do it unless, unless you really can't walk or you're really like in medical distress or something. But it's kind of like, I wouldn't mind if this was over now.
So 227.58 though, that's a new Canadian course record, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. There's going back to Jackie Gouraud in the 80s, she actually I think was second in the race, and quite likely should have won the race at the time, and she's kind of a Canadian legend.
Wow. So speaking of Canadians, I know Natasha Wodak was in the field as well. I know she didn't have the day she wanted, but you guys do some training together a little bit here and there. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Natasha and I actually have been running against each other for 20 plus years since we were in high school, and she's only a year behind me in school. So we've crossed paths a number of times. We actually kind of offset our breaks from the sport, so we didn't overlap a whole lot until the last few years. And we live about 4 hours apart, so we try and connect during our builds a few times to do some workouts. We were with the similar team. We have different coaches, but Trent Stellingworth, who's now her coach, has helped me on the physiology and sport nutrition side. But it's kind of like, I don't know, we're just like a gang. We just like to have fun together. Natasha and Trent and Trent's wife Hillary, who I used to race against in the 1500, and my husband, we're all friends. So it definitely makes it even more fun when we can kind of get together. And we went to California for a couple of weeks and overlapped our training and traveled together to the race. So it does keep it really fun.
Okay, so your husband is coaching you now. Let's talk about that a little bit. How long has he been coaching you?
He has been coaching me the whole time I've been doing marathons. So when I started running marathons, it was my my baby, who's now almost 4, was a couple months old, and I went for a run with some friends who were doing Chicago Marathon. And it was it was kind of late August, early September, and I got really excited that they were doing Chicago. And I came home and I said to Graham, I think I want to go to Chicago and pace my friends. They were going to aim for like 3:30 for the marathon, which at that point, honestly, would have been really hard for me because I could barely run an hour without stopping. But I had a 12-week-old baby, so what do you expect? And I just kind of got caught up in the like, oh, they're going to Chicago. It's going to be so fun. I'm going to have some FOMO here. And first of all, I had like there was no way I could actually go to Chicago with an infant. He's still nursing. Like that was not feasible. But I thought for a few minutes, oh, I could find a babysitter or whatever. Anyways, Graham said, no, that's not going to work. You can't do that. But you could probably be ready. He was more thinking even just I physically could not do a marathon at that point, which was true. He said, you can be ready in about 3 months. And then he got out a calendar and he kind of looked at it and he's like, you could be ready for Houston in January. I'll put a plan together for you.
Oh my gosh.
So he sat down and he kind of mapped it out and he progressed my loading from really not a whole lot of running, right? Like I said, I was taking walk breaks in my hour-long 5-minute kilometer runs or 8-minute mile runs. And he put it together. And we had a few hiccups along the way, but overall we made a lot of gains in those, 10 weeks. And just a couple weeks before Houston, I did a workout and it kind of exceeded our expectations. It was like just fitness was coming around right at the right time. And my goal had been to just run around 240. I thought that was reasonable. And still going to be very challenging. When I say reasonable, it was going to be a stretch goal. And then I did this workout and it was just like, oh man, anything is kind of possible now at this point. And I went out and I ran 2:32 and I had a great experience. That was 2019, my first marathon. I loved it. It felt so good. My baby was just about almost 7 months old. He was there with us. And I finished the race and Graham just looked at me as like, you gotta go for Olympic standard now, which is 2:29:30. Said we can find 2.5 minutes for you. And so it kind of just cemented our new relationship, coach athlete. I mean, obviously family is first, and all that sort of thing. But it's pretty cool having him on board for this journey now because he's really invested. He's making a lot of sacrifices too for me to be able to get in my training and to balance the family and to come home and, cook the dinner so I can go and train and look after the kids after his day of work, that sort of thing. And I work as well. So having him really as part of the team and our and my running success is as much about what he's doing for me as anything has been really cool.
Wow, that is so wild that you were able to whip out that 232. And friends listening, make sure you go back and listen to my original episode with Melindy because we recorded right after you ran the 224 in Houston when you set the Canadian marathon record.
Right, yeah, that was over 2 years ago already.
Wow.
Time flies.
So much has happened since then. And the reason I tell everybody to go listen back to that episode is because this whole situation is like a resurgence of a running career because Melindy was a track athlete, she was a triathlete, and there's a break in there, and then you come back with this like in this powerhouse way running these marathons. I mean, so you're 42 now. Like, is this anything you ever envisioned?
No, it's crazy. I mean, if you had told me when I was running the on the track in the 1500 that I would become a competitive marathoner, I honestly would have just thought it was the biggest joke in the world. I wasn't someone who liked doing long runs or tempo runs or mileage or any of the things that are key to being successful in the marathon. So it's been an evolution for sure.
Now, how have you trained yourself to enjoy those long runs?
I think that partly it's just 20 years of training under my belt. So now it's not so daunting to go out for a couple hours and run where, when I was younger, that was really hard to do and kind of just gradually built up. I think also doing a few years of competitive triathlon in the 70.3 and full, Ironman distance changed both my perspective and mindset towards the long days, and also built a lot of aerobic strength so that it's more enjoyable now.
Nothing like a full Ironman to make a marathon standing alone seem like not that far.
It's so true. The first couple times, so this was my fourth marathon, by the way, a standalone. But the first few marathons I did, yeah, it's like when you start an Ironman marathon, first of all, it's the middle of the afternoon, so it's hot. Second of all, you've just biked 180 kilometers. I'm not sure what that is in miles, but really far.
112,
Take
it's
five or six,
112, I think.
112 miles, hard in an aerial position, so bent over, so you get off and your hip flexors are just wrecked. That's 5 or 6 hours on the bike after an hour of swimming basically as hard as you can, and you're dehydrated, your glycogen stores are depleted, your muscles are cramping. I can't even stand up for like the first 8 miles. I'm just still in like a hunched over position from the bike. So yeah, a marathon after doing Ironman is like, it's pretty cool.
You feel fresh at that start
Yeah.
line.
It is nice to feel fresh, yeah, and to not be all sticky and just and gross and
Oh my goodness. Okay, so we have Houston, Tokyo, and Boston. Those are your four marathons.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about Tokyo. Melindy ran in her first marathon for the Olympics this past year and placed ninth
Yay.
place. Top 10 in the Olympics. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, top 10 was my goals, and I was thrilled that it worked out that way. It was another really grueling race in a completely different way than Boston. We went out pretty slow, conservatively, like a pack of 80. So it was funny. I was just in this huge, huge, huge pack for the first while. And then it kind of dwindled down to maybe 40. But the aid stations were just a riot coming into the aid stations, just people like all over the place trying to get to their bottles, people tossing bottles. We were getting ice packs every couple K. So you're stuffing ice packs down your shirt, you're dumping water on your head. For people who don't know this, we started at 6 a.m. and it was already over 20 degrees Celsius. So in the high 70s, I think, Fahrenheit, if my quick math is correct, and humid. And through the course of the morning, it basically, by the time we finished, was the equivalent of over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, over 40 degrees Celsius with the humidity and the heat, and of course no cover, no shade cover. So we were just every chance we get dumping water on ourselves, throwing ice down our jerseys, fueling, getting water in. And I found, I was with the pack for the first 18K, and then the pack fractured, and spent the rest of the race alone again, with people up the road. And that in that case, in Boston, I didn't pick anyone off. I just stayed in the same position essentially. But this race, I picked off maybe another 10 people over the next 20 kilometers after I lost the pack, because people would just implode. It was remarkable. You'd be fine. And then suddenly, and even I struggled at one point, realizing I went from feeling fine to, oh my goodness, I think I'm gonna throw up like any second within steps, and it just gets dangerous so fast.
Yeah, I mean, that weather was so crazy. Did you know when you were coming in to finish that you were in the top 10?
I did at that point. I didn't know until I was about 6K to go and I hit an aid station, and our physio who was giving me water on course said that I was 40 seconds out of the top 10, but I didn't know what spot I was in. And I just remember thinking, oh boy, I can't pick up 40 seconds. Like, I can't run 40 seconds faster. However, I didn't pick it up, but other people started walking or slowed down or whatever, or dropped out. So I moved up two or three positions, but I didn't do anything. I just kept trudging forward, and that's all I needed to do was just keep putting one step in front of another.
I mean, particularly hard though, being from Canada, running in that heat. I always think back to, you know, Krista Duchesne at the Boston Marathon when she placed third, and like all that like Canadian running and all those like tough winters and harsh weather, like, you know, being on her side and how she was able to be so tough in that terrible weather. But like you coming from a colder climate running, I know it was summer, but still, but like going to run in this heat that you're just, you don't train in often. How did you handle that?
Well, actually, it kind of is the opposite. We do get cold winters, but we get very hot summers where I live. So in June last year, we were under that heat dome that was, you know, enveloped the whole West Coast.
Okay.
And we had at least a week where it was over 40 degrees Celsius. It hit 46 degrees Celsius, like 120 degrees Fahrenheit in my town, in my city in Kelowna, BC. And we're in a kind of in the top of a desert climate. So we get a lot of heat. We don't get humidity, but I'm used to running in heat. And I had run all June and July in very, very warm temperatures at home. And then we went to Japan with the Canadian team 15 days before we raced. We had a training camp in Gifu. It's in the middle of the country. And it was hotter and more humid than Sapporo. So we did a lot of heat acclimating leading into the race. So we actually felt really as prepared as you could be for the day. And we had really practiced a lot of heat mitigating strategies and had a plan down. And I think that really helped us as the Canadian team actually fared quite well compared to a number of other countries who maybe didn't do quite as much proactive heat acclimating.
Yes. So Natasha was also in the top 15. Who's the third Canadian that was there?
Well, our third Canadian had an unfortunate experience. She was injured going into the race, so she didn't have a spectacular performance. But I think the preparation that Natasha and I did, and if you look at even a lot of our athletes on the track, you know, we had great performances from Mo and from Gabriella, and, you know, our whole middle distance program that more or less followed various versions of this protocol fared really well.
Hey friends, this podcast is sponsored by Inside Tracker. Created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics, Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. We are all spending a lot of time running and pushing our bodies, and knowing what's going on inside our bodies is going to help us reach our potential. You get a daily action plan with personalized guidance on the right exercise, nutrition, and supplementation for your body when you use Inside Tracker. I know one of the reasons we spend so much time running and moving our bodies and exercises because we want to feel good. Well, this will give you a way to make sure you're also putting the right nutrients into your body so that you are fully optimized. I am personally planning to run a fall marathon, so this is the perfect time to get my blood work done and check out what's going on inside with Inside Tracker before ramping up training. I figure if I'm going to spend all this time training, I might as well make sure I am fully optimized with what I'm putting into my body. So for a limited time, you all can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/another. That's insidetracker.com/another. And the code for 20% off is another. All right, back to the show. So being in Tokyo, was there anything, like, what are the lessons learned and what are the most memorable experiences that you are keeping with you?
Being at the Olympics this past year was really a surreal experience. I think because of COVID as well. Like, we were in quarantine the entire time. We were with the Canadian team the entire time. It didn't feel like the Olympics. Mm-hmm. We actually were staying at a different hotel than the rest of the marathoners because we'd had a close contact on the flight over. So they put us in the quarantine hotel, which was removed from the athlete village in Tokyo to begin with. So it actually didn't feel like we were at the Olympics. We just We were just our own little squad. We could get out once a day for training in a really restricted venue. And the rest of the time we were in our rooms. And so it's funny because it was the Olympics, but it doesn't kind of feel like the Olympics. So, but you do, a lot of bonding as a team when you spend 15 days together with the same people going everywhere. And made some, had some great times with the group that we had. And we were, I feel pretty fortunate that Athletics Canada sent us with such an amazing team to support us. So there were three men, three women, two race walkers, so eight athletes. And then I think we had eight staff members as well. So we had a physio, we had a physiologist, we had coaches, we had a manager and a team doctor. And that team just really rallied around us, and they were so positive and so supportive. And you just get, you just kind of get into your groove where you're like the group of 16 Canadians off to go training with their ice packs and their cooler and their towels. And I'll look back on that experience really fondly because of the people that I got to spend time with.
So, do you ever think, like, what if I wouldn't have gone to Houston? Like, your life, I know you guys have a big coaching business and everything, and you have your boys, and your life would be full and fulfilling, but is that weird to think about?
Well, in fact, I think that's partly why I've had so much fun this round of being an athlete again, because I am, if I wasn't running anymore, if something happened, I'd be just as happy as I am running. I love running. It's so cool to do this sport. It's so cool to meet these people and travel and go to races and meet goals. But I feel very fulfilled with family life and career and where I'm at as a 42-year-old person. So it's kind of the cherry on top, right? It's all bonus, and it's also, I feel like now I'm approaching the sport more as really as any woman with a job and children doing their best they can. And it happens that I can run pretty fast over the marathon distance still, but I can really connect well with people who have, similar life phase to me, which is different than, say, when I was just purely an elite athlete, full time running with not as much on the go. But then at that point, I was putting so much more pressure on myself, and it was, I don't know, it was just, it was harder to maybe appreciate what I was able to do.
Yeah, we look at you and other athletes on these start lines, and to us it's like you look so fit, and we know you've worked so hard for this, and you have a strong mind, and this is what you do for a living. But like, I know that there's a real human in there, and that there are hard days, and there are days where things are not easy, and the workouts don't come easy, or kids are sick, or there's just like a lot going on. So when those things are happening in your training, what do you tell yourself?
Well, actually, this build was a bit challenging in that respect because I think there, we, since the end of February, right until last week, there was somebody who was sick every single week for the last 2 months, including myself for a good 6 weeks there. My son had neurovirus 2 weeks ago. He threw up for 9 days straight. I couldn't take him to daycare. I couldn't really train the way I had hoped to. I mean, I got the training in for sure, but I'm going on my treadmill. I'm going, odd times of the day to fit it in. My husband got COVID a week before Boston, so he had to move out of the house so he didn't get me sick. So suddenly I find myself with both the children. One is still recovering from norovirus. My husband is not helping with meals or bedtime or even spelling me off to go for a run. I'm throwing the kids in front of a screen to get my run done on the treadmill.
This
So
is
yeah, it's
2 weeks
just
before the race.
oh no, this is a week before the race. This is
Oh my
Sunday,
gosh.
like 8 days before when we found out Graham had COVID, and I found ticks in my kids' heads embedded in their heads, and I'm taking these ticks to the public health unit to get them tested for Lyme disease and trying to find prophylactic antibiotics for my youngest because he's too small to take the normal dosage. It's just like
Wow.
you can't worry too much about this race when you've got all this other stuff going on. But it gets done, right? Like, and I think that's why having my husband as my coach is, it is still a priority for our family that we figure out how it's going to be done. We just have to be very flexible in how it happens.
I mean, The norovirus thing alone would have been enough to send me over the edge.
Yeah.
Did anybody else get sick? Like, did anybody else get the nor? I mean, is that a contagious stomach virus?
Oh, it's highly contagious. So I'm not sure how we didn't get sick.
Wow.
I'm not sure if maybe my son actually had COVID, but if you've tried, I'm sure you've tried to give your children a COVID test now, and administering your child a COVID nasal swab test, especially when they're three and they're as strong as anything and very resistant, is pretty much impossible to get a proper sample.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's pretty wild. I mean, those are worse than everyday life stressors, if I'm being honest. Like, that's, you know, there is everyday life stress, but like that's a lot to happen in the 2 weeks leading up. The norovirus, your husband getting COVID, you being alone, the ticks. I mean, that is so, so much. So like, you get to the start line and you just let it all go?
Well, thankfully I traveled on Thursday before the race. So, and that was quite an adventure getting there, which I'll spare you all the details, but it was a stressful day, and it culminated with arriving at the hotel at 1 a.m. and finally getting to my room, and there was somebody in my room.
What? Like, you opened the door and someone was in there?
Yes. Someone was in the bed, poor girl.
You probably freaked her out. I know. I always wonder though, why don't people put those lock things over so that like, I would never, especially if I was by myself, be in a hotel room and not put the lock thing over.
I definitely put the lock thing over. That's actually at least the second time where I've received a key and gone up to a room and found somebody's in the room that I was given a key for.
That's kind of terrifying, really, because like, thank God you're a safe person, right?
Yes. But yeah, it would be worse to be the person in the bed having someone open the door and walk in than being me 100%. Walking in on the person.
100%. What did you do?
Oh, I just said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I think she was a participant in the race.
Okay.
She looked like one of the athletes, and I just closed the door as quickly as possible. But I'm standing there with my pizza in my hand because I had traveled all day. I hadn't had a chance to eat all day. We arrived at the hotel and the food service was done, and we had walked a mile to get food in the pouring rain, and they didn't serve. And so finally we ordered Uber Eats to the hotel. And so I'm holding this pizza and I just want to eat my pizza. And so now I'm trudging back down to the hotel lobby, right? I need my room key so I can go eat my pizza, because they wouldn't let me eat the pizza in the lobby either. Anyways.
Why wouldn't they let you eat the pizza in the lobby?
I have no idea. Anyways, that was the rule. So we were eating our pizza in the lobby, I was sharing the pizza with Natasha and her partner, Alan, because they had traveled in with me. So we were splitting a pizza. So now it's really hard to split a pizza when you're not allowed to eat it together. So I'm holding my three pieces and they've got the rest of it in their room. So the next day was really lovely. Friday, I woke up and I had the day to myself, and I'm in the Fairmont. That's where they put the athletes. So that's lovely. And I just, you know, go for a stroll and get some coffee and see some friends. And for me, that's when I actually get the chance to relax.
To realize I'm running the Boston Marathon on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think I create stress just to, you know, because like, am I addicted to creating stressful situations for myself? But I actually don't. I'm not trying to get people sick the week before my race.
Right.
But it's just, you know, it's just like, you know, it's family life. There's always something going on.
Yeah. Talk about the training and the kids and the coaching and everything that you do day to day. Like, what does a typical day look like? Do your boys go to childcare?
Well, my oldest son is 7. He's in grade 2, second grade. So okay. For example, you know, most days, all days, I'm usually up around 6, because that's how much time it takes to get everyone organized and out the door. We leave by 8. So I drop him off, and then I drop my son off at preschool. Oh, not preschool. He's in daycare. Same thing, whatever. And then every day is different. So I coach the university team in Kelowna, UBC Okanagan. So we have practices a few days a week. So those evenings are kind of shot. I often do my second run with them as part of their warm up. I also coach a bunch of people online. I'm race directing a triathlon next week here locally. So right now I'm really busy organizing that. So I had started all these things that I was passionate about before I became a pro runner again, coaching and events and and that sort of thing. And I don't want to let it go because I know that I'm not going to be at this level of sport for forever. And I've worked hard to kind of build up this business of mine. So, you know, most days, like I do my training as soon as I drop the kids off. A couple days a week, I go and do strength training as well at a great gym, and then come home and I put my head down and do all my computer work, admin work for anything that needs to be done. A few days a week, I pick my kids up and we do after school activities. That's important to me that they, you know, are exposed to as many great things as possible. And then I get home, go for a second run. My husband, like I said, makes dinner, and then we do some family time, put them to bed. And if it's not, a night, you know, if it's not a family night, then it's a night that I'm at the track coaching.
Wow. What time are you doing that second run? It's got to be pretty late, huh?
Well, it really depends on the day. I'd say usually it's like 4:30 or 5-ish. I really like to get runs in before dinner, and we eat dinner together as a family every night unless I'm coaching. That's important to us as a family. So I usually go run while Graham gets dinner ready. And then I come home and he says, "You've got 5 minutes to shower. Dinner's being served." And he's awesome that way.
I love it. I love that Dad's doing dinner. That's so good.
You know what? My husband, he is just a great partner, and he is a very equal parent in this parenting project of ours.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that we are headed in more in that direction, you know, as time goes on. And I feel the same way. I do think I'm physically with my kids a little bit more because he works more hours than I do. But yeah, I feel the same way. And I'm super grateful. It's kind of funny when older generations look at us and think it's crazy. Even my dad, you know, he's like, he gets confused sometimes with how much my husband does with my kids. And I'm like, come on, it's 2022.
Totally. Yeah. I was talking to a friend about that too. And she said, that her friend's husbands need to be told what to do with their children, mm-mm. right? Like given a list or whatever. I'm like, I don't tell my husband what to do. I just leave the house. Like he knows. Yeah. And he might not do it the same way as me, but that's fine, right? The kids are safe and happy and healthy. So that's all that matters.
Totally. I know my sister-in-law, if she leaves the house leaving the kids with her husband, I know she's got a list, and I'm like, peace. Like, you'll probably do this better than me in all reality. I'll see you in a couple days.
Totally.
I know your boys are, so they're 3 and 7, right?
Yes.
I loved your post the other day. You're like, I'm just trying to keep people alive over here. Like, I've saved this kid's life three times today. I don't know if that was the other day, but it was someday. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, isn't that the truth? Some days I'm just like, thank God I've kept you all alive.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Some days are just like, well, everyone got fed today and we made it. We're putting them to bed and we made it. And there's still 4 people in this house. And we didn't give anyone away either today.
How do you balance? This is something I struggle with as a parent sometimes. Like, how do you balance, you know, just like days like that, right? Where it's like, we did good. Like you said, everybody's fed and everything. But also like wanting to like do it all well. Because, you know, like, you want to do it well. Like I want to provide my kids all those opportunities that, you know, you mentioned with after school stuff and things like that. I want to be present and emotionally available, but like some days I just can't do it all. And some days I do feel like I do it well. I'm not sure there is a balance, but I'm just curious your feelings on all that.
Yeah. It's hard, right? It's some days feel effortless and you can go to bed thinking I did a great job today. I really rocked it. And then other times, you know, it's like, oh, I think I just give me a passing grade and everything. I feel like I didn't do the best I could coaching. I didn't feel like that. I cut my training short today for whatever reason. I was grumpy with the kids today. And then I go to bed. And that's usually a sign that it's just time to go to bed and wake up fresh the next day and put it all behind you. And it's hard because we have to figure out where to let go. And when you've got high expectations in all areas of your life, basically, there's not really one place where you can let your guard down, right? You need to be a good parent. You need to do a good job at your job. You need to run well. So it all has to figure out how to coexist.
Yeah. I was at Target yesterday with my oldest. It was so lovely going to Target with just one 9-year-old. And there was a sign that said the sun will come up. And I was like, do I need to buy that sign? I think I need to buy that. Like, I ended up not buying it because I think I'm going to look on Etsy to see if like I can find like, you know, like a, you know, small business where they're selling them. Because I'm sure there's signs that say the sun will come up on Etsy.
I'm sure.
You know, yep. For $50 more, but that's okay. But I was like, that is like my motherhood mantra. The sun will come up. I usually say it's a new day tomorrow, but I think I might transition it to the sun will come up.
It's very optimistic. Yes, the sun will come up. I was walking my 3, almost 4-year-old to school with my son, my older son today, and he was skipping along, holding my hand, skipping happy, happy, happy today. And I thought, you know, my day is so much based on his mood, if I have a good day. Mm-hmm. And he's been a challenging kid. And I realized also that he was actually not feeling well for a really long time because he was so grumpy and clingy and whiny and needed to be carried, and everything was upsetting him. And it was making me so anxious the last few weeks. And then I realized today, well, first of all, he wasn't actually feeling well. So now I can see that he's feeling well. And two, boy, if your kid is happy, it just makes your whole day so much easier.
Oh, 100%. That's why it's so hard when they're not happy.
I know. Yeah. The Etsy sign is a good one. I think if you find a link, let me know.
Okay. I will. What do the boys think about mom? You know, do they know how cool that is that you place 9th at the Olympics?
I think they do. I mean, it's just kind of what they know, but you know, my older son, he came home from grandma's yesterday. She picks him up on the days I coach, picks him up from school, and had a bouquet of flowers that he asked her to pick up for me to go in my vase that I received from the Boston Marathon. He needed flowers for the vase.
That is the cutest thing ever. I love that.
Yes. So they're pretty sweet. Oliver, the younger, the 3-year-old, he keeps calling it that I just came back from the Boston Olympics.
The Boston Olympics?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, did it feel as hard as the Olympics?
It was hard in completely different ways. So yes and no. I mean, it's really cool, the Boston course. Of course, I think the thing that I loved about Boston, and this is what people love about it, is just you can feel how important that event is and how much legacy there is and how meaningful it is to the state of Massachusetts and the greater area of Boston and all the runners coming in. You know, my flight from Kelowna, I have 3 flights to get to Boston from Kelowna, and people are wearing their Boston jackets on the way there. They're so excited to be going back. Getting into Boston as an athlete is a big deal. So you're kind of sharing this energy with people where you realize like, this is really important, this event on so many levels, and I get to be part of it, and that's really cool. And the Olympics are cool, but you don't have that same energy where it's there every single year, where it's embraced by the community, where it's also something that other runners are aspiring to be a part of, right? So that's what I love about these huge community events.
Yeah. Did you feel like you were able at all to connect to the everyday runner while you were there?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, we're everywhere. And I have lots of Canadian friends who are running it, and lots of, it's so important to people. And it's almost like, you know, Natasha and I joked, you're not actually a marathoner till you've run Boston.
That's so good. Do you have Boston was obviously on your list, like you wanted to run the Boston Marathon. Do you have any others that you for sure want to make sure you do?
Well, I'd like to do all the majors now, especially New York sounds epic as well. I'd love to do, you know, Toronto Waterfront Marathon because that's the big Canadian marathon. I'd say those ones are kind of bucket list items as well. And then, of course, you know, Paris Olympics 2024, that would be a cool one.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you have your sights set on that. Like, do you have any kind of like long-term vision of where you see retirement? Not that that's happening anytime soon, but I'm just curious, like, you're keeping up your other businesses so strong. You've got a lot going on. Where do you see this going?
Yeah, I would say through 2024 Olympics would kind of be the goal I have in mind.
Okay.
And it's actually only 2 years plus a few months away, so it's quite a reasonable time frame. I think at that point I'd have to really step back and evaluate what my reasons and my purpose would be in the sport continuing forward. And not to say that I won't continue to be a runner and I won't continue to participate in races, but do I want to be as all in as this forever? Especially, you know, being realistic, I'll be 44 and a half years old in Paris. I don't expect that at 48 years old I'll be running the times to qualify for the Olympics. I think that that's a reasonable, not to say I can't run well, but you know, let's be realistic here. And even just like the load on the family, my kids are getting to the age where I'd like to shift the focus where the weekends isn't about mom's long run and it's about Charlie's soccer tournament or going camping or whatever else we are doing as a family.
Okay, do you struggle at all with like the getting older thing? Like knowing that at 48, it's probably not likely that you're gonna bust out a 224 marathon.
I mean, never say never, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't really feel like I'm getting older. It's just like I haven't really felt a plateau or a change in my workouts are still as good or better than ever for this distance. I think for one thing, having had a 7 year break in my competitive running career really helped the longevity of my sport and even just my interest in the sport. I think if I'd continued right straight through forever, then I might not be at this place today. But certainly, I don't think that you have this dramatic decline in fitness or anything like that at a certain age. It's probably a more gradual kind of, or more, you know, maybe more proneness to injury, that sort of thing. But I'll say at 42, I still feel as good as I did at 32 when it comes to this kind of stuff.
That's amazing. I love hearing that. Okay, Melindy. Well, last question. After running your first Boston Marathon, what is your advice to someone running the course for the first time?
Well, my advice is that everyone talks about those Newton Hills and everyone talks about the long downhill before the Newton Hills that breaks up your legs. But there are a lot of uphills as well in that first section of the course that I completely underestimated and I got onto and I thought, oh my gosh, there's not supposed to be a hill here. The hills are supposed to come later. So I think you know, just really realizing that it's a challenging course from start to finish and not just the latter part of the race.
Yeah, what mile, or I guess you would think of it in kilometers, were you first like, what is this hill doing here?
Oh boy, they almost come right away. I definitely think between 10K and 20K, so let's say 6 miles and 12 miles, that I thought ahead and realized that this was a hard course and I was going to be tired before I got to the Newton Hills. And that's okay. And then I just accepted it and was like, okay, let's, you know, one step at a time, 1 kilometer at a time, run the K you're in, run the mile you're in, and take it as it comes. But I kind of in my mind thought, oh, the first part of the course is kind of a give me and coast through that. And then you get to the hard part. And then when I got into it, I realized, no, it's actually all kind of hard.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was thinking 6 miles. I haven't ran it in a few years, but I was thinking 6 miles is around when you first get like a little incline and it's like, wait, what are you doing here?
It's not supposed to be hard. Yeah, it's supposed to be downhill.
Yeah. Well, Melindy, I was rooting for you. I was betting on you and cheering you along the whole way. So, I know you wanted the top 10, but 11's great, and you persevered through a race where you felt like not the greatest.
And that's cool too, right? That's what keeps us coming back for more. So I'm happy. I'm thrilled I had the opportunity to run this iconic course. And during the race, I thought, oh, I'm never doing this again. And now here I am today going, okay, so how do I fit in this race again next year?
When you want to do all these other majors, but you can do some of those majors like after retirement, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. And then actually, like my friend Lauren Fleshman ran in Wave 4. I'm sure a lot of listeners know her and follow her. And she ran for Girls on the Run, and she said that her experience was epic and amazing and inspiring and so much fun. And so I think, yeah, that like I will be more than happy to join her and do it that way one day as well.
I love that she ran in Wave 4. That's so awesome. I actually wasn't following that. I don't think I even realized that she ran.
Yeah, and she ran pretty well. Her longest run leading into this was at 117 miler. And then she went out in, I think she said like 131 for her first half and knew, oh boy, I'm gonna be in trouble second half. But she hung on
What did she
and
run?
did
What
it.
was her time?
I think she ran 312.
Okay, I'll take a 312 in Boston. Dang.
Seriously, right?
Oh, that's good. All right, Melindy. Well, good luck with the rest of your coaching today, and I hope you can get some downtime and your kids all stay healthy.
You know what? Thank you. I appreciate it. I can't imagine with four boys how chaotic your house is. I think of you all the time. I love your tweets and your Instagram because it just reminds me of my lifetimes. It's not like times two, it's times exponential the more children you add, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know what though? I just love talking to other people who have like rowdy kids. It seems like your kids are a little bit rowdy like mine, and that just I have a kinship to people who have rowdy kids.
Oh, yeah, 100%. They keep it real.
All right, Melindy. Well, thank you. Speaking of those kids, I'm always the last mom to pick up line, and I don't know if the preschool moms just think teachers think I'm a hot mess or roll their eyes at me, but I got to go pick them up.
All right, go sprint down there and pick up your kids.
Thanks, Melindy.
Okay, thanks, Lindsay. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right, friends, thanks for being here today. Thank you, Melindy, for sharing your story. Congrats on a great Boston. Hey, if you aren't already following Melindy, go follow Melindy on Instagram. She is Melindy Elmore over there. You can also find me personally on Instagram. I'm LindsayHine626. You can find this podcast network, Sandy Boy Productions, on Instagram. We'd love to connect with you there. And we have a great Facebook group. We'd love for you to join and connect with our listeners and the community. It's just called I'll Have Another with Lindsay Hine. Don't forget to go sign up for that Mother's Day 5K to support the Donna Foundation, doing great work to support those walking through a breast cancer diagnosis and supporting groundbreaking research. Run that 5K with me. Run it easy, run it hard, run it with your neighbors, but go support this great organization. Go to mdyw.breastcancermarathon.com to get registered. Use the code Lindsay10 for 10% off your registration and join team I'll Have Another. Friends, thank you for being here. Have a great rest of your day. Two episodes this week. Whoop whoop. Have a great day and we'll see you Friday.